So we are going to be looking at the next in a series on the patriarchs. If you remember last time, it was about Jacob stealing a birthright. And today we're going to talk about a blessing that he took. But maybe as a way of beginning, let's have a children's class. So those who would like to come forward for children's class can come forward. And I guess everybody else can just listen. So the verse I would like to think about is from Psalm 101, verse 7. He who works deceit shall not dwell within my house. He who tells lies shall not continue in my presence. That's a good verse, isn't it? Lots of good verses in the Bible. In fact, they're all good verses. And we're going to be talking today about Jacob and Esau and about Jacob's plot to get a special prayer of blessing that Isaac thought he was going to be giving to Esau. Have you all heard that story before? Most of you have anyway. So I thought that in preparation for this, I would do something really bad. Can you think of something really bad that I would do to prepare for a children's class? Yes, Grayson. It's a really hard to think, but yes, Sophie. Give a patient a bad medicine. No, not that bad. In fact, I don't know. I can't think of any time I deliberately did that. Okay? Maybe a bad tasting medicine. There's some bad tasting medicines in this world, aren't there? That's why you don't want to get sick. Anybody else think of anything bad that I might have done to think about deceit? Do any of you know what the word deceit means? That's a big word, isn't it? Yeah, it means to deceive. It means basically to tell a lie. So I thought that I would become a counterfeiter. Do you know what a counterfeiter is? No? Oh, you're going to learn about it this morning. So a counterfeiter is somebody who makes fake money. And then they give it to other people as though it was real. Do you think it's easy to be a counterfeiter? No? Well, I thought it would be really easy. I thought I'd just take a picture of some money, and then I would print it on my printer. It sounds pretty easy, right? Yeah. Well, it isn't. It's really hard. Because if you try to print pictures of money, the printer won't let you do it. Probably none of you all have ever tried that. It gives you a pop-up that says it's not legal. And I don't even have that good a printer. I certainly don't have paper that looks like real paper that they print money on. So it doesn't let you do that. And so I worked really hard, and I tried doing all sorts of things because I am a conniver and I'm a deceiver. And I thought, you know, a counterfeiter like me, he should be able to print money. And I couldn't do it. So I'm going to show you the... Yes, Grayson. Yeah, I could have done that, but I don't think anybody would take that. See, that's the problem. So I wanted money that I could use at the store. So this is the closest I could do. So this is a $1 million bill that I counterfeited. You can hold it. Okay, but you can't spend it. You can pick it up. So have you all ever seen a $1 million bill before? That's a lot of money, isn't it? Yeah. Pretty impressive. That's what I thought. And I did. I have not tried to spend it yet because I don't think that most of the convenience stores around here have changed for that. So why do you think it's bad to print your own money? It would seem like a good idea, wouldn't it? Yes, Grayson. It'd be cheating, okay. Can any of you, the rest of you, think why it might be bad to print your own money? It would be deceiving. That's right. So the problem is that what you're doing is basically a lie. So what you're saying is that you have real money when you don't have real money. And if you go to the store and you spend it, and then that person takes the money from you, and then they try to put it in the bank won't take it from them. And so basically they gave you something for free. So have any of you all counterfeited money? No, I'm guessing not. So that's good. But have you ever told something that wasn't true? Yeah, that's a harder thing, isn't it? Yes, Grayson. When you were little. Okay. Well, you've gotten beyond that, fortunately. So there are times we say and do things that people get the impression that something isn't true, is true, and that's a bad thing. So Jacob had a lot of things to learn in his life, and we're going to hear about this story when he did something that was kind of like counterfeiting. And said he was a counterfeit brother. So you think about that as we listen to the sermon here. You can go back to your parents. So most of this sermon is going to be taken from Genesis chapter 27. But as a beginning, I would like to read the verses that are up on the board here. Proverbs 26, 24 through 26. He who hates disguises it with his lips and lays up deceit within himself. When he speaks kindly, do not believe him, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Though his hatred is covered by deceit, his wickedness will be revealed before the assembly. So the idea in this verse is that deception will eventually come out. So often, we are afraid of somebody finding out the real truth about ourselves, about something that we did, and we do something or say something that will cover that covers it up. And it is always worse when that cover-up comes out than what it would have been if we just had told the truth in the beginning. So last time that I preached, which I don't even remember, that's so long ago, we talked about the birthright, and we are now coming to the story of Jacob and Esau and a blessing. And some people have thought that the birthright and the blessing were the same thing, but that's not the case. We'll find out later on in this that Esau talks about them separately, saying that Jacob had first of all stolen his birthright, and now that he had taken the blessing that was due to him. And just as we're looking through this, I want us to think a little bit about the question of whether Isaac's blessing actually conferred blessing that would not have happened otherwise, or if it was merely prophetic. So Old Testament people often verged on the edge of a magical belief about God. This is particularly true in the book of Genesis. That is, if a person had the right magic spell or incantation, he could make God do what he wanted. And they believe this. And before we're too hard on them, I think sometimes people have this sort of view about salvation. They believe that if you just say the right word, it doesn't matter what you do, that God has to let you into heaven. I think as we read this, we're going to find out that the blessing was prophetic. It reminds me a little bit of the situation where Balaam was asked to come and curse the Israelites by King Balak. And he came hoping to get a bunch of money, and he went away not any richer, because he told the king, I can only say what God tells me to say. And in the same way, if Esau had gone in first, I believe his blessing would have been the same. And it would have been surprising to both Esau and Isaac. God was planning to bless Jacob mightily and his descendants as well. But the fact that Jacob acted deceptively did not change that fact. But we're going to find out a little bit about what happened to Jacob as the result of his deception, and it wasn't good. So if any of you have read the book The Fields of Home by Ralph Moody, his grandfather told him a story about a man who had a field. And the marker for the edge of the field was a stream. And one day, around the time of the Revolutionary War, a big storm came through and shifted the course of the stream so that his field was on the other side of the stream. Well, that man just threw down logs for a bridge across, and he and his sons continued to go across to work the field. Well, this was, as I said, around the time of the Revolutionary War, and his neighbor took him to court after the war was over, saying that the field was actually his field because it was on the other side of the stream, and the deed said that the stream was the boundary of the land. Well, the court ruled against the man and his sons, and so that man said to the first man, the one who is deceptive, well, you've won fair and square in court, so I'd like to make a deal with you. I will raise one more crop on that piece of land and pay you, that is, rent the land, and you keep the fences up and the taxes paid until the crop is raised. Well, the man who had stolen the property lighted up at this prospect, and they drew up a document to that effect. Only the crop that was raised wasn't corn or beans or wheat like he probably thought it would be. That man put in a crop of white oaks, and it took nearly 100 years for them to grow to the point where they were mature and ready to be harvested. And the whole time, his descendants had to keep up with the taxes and keep the fences up. And Ralph's grandfather made it clear that those who are deceptive don't actually get ahead by it, and often get themselves into trouble, even though they believe that they're getting ahead by walking dishonestly. The big thing that we can say for sure is that regardless of if they are wealthy or poor, it's not a good idea to spend a lot of time with deceptive people. They're not trustworthy, and in the end, their deceptions will be revealed, and we'll all end up suffering with them, even if we're not the ones doing the deceiving. So let's turn to Genesis chapter 27. We're going to do a fair amount of reading here, but I think it's good to do so. And this is, it's not the longest story in the book of Genesis, but it's a fairly long story. But we'll start at verse 1 and go through to the end. Now it came to pass when Isaac was old and his eyes were so dim that he could not see, that he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son." And he answered, "Here am I, here I am." Then he said, "Behold, now I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now, therefore, please take your weapons, your quiver and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me, and make me savory food, such as I love, and bring it to me, that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to Esau, his son. And Esau went to the field to hunt game and to bring it. So Rebekah spoke to Jacob, her son, saying, "Indeed, I heard your father speak to Esau, your brother, saying, 'Bring me game and make savory food for me that I may eat it and bless you in the presence of the Lord before my death.' Now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to what I command you. Go now to the flock and bring me from there two choice kids of the goats, and I will make savory food from them for your father, such as he loves. Then you shall take it to your father that he may eat it, and that he may bless you before his death." And Jacob said to Rebekah's mother, "Look, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth-skinned man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I shall seem to be a deceiver to him. And I shall bring a curse on myself and not a blessing." It's kind of funny that he would say, "seem to be a deceiver," isn't it? Maybe he should have said, "You know, my father will realize I'm a deceiver." But his mother said to him, "Let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go get them for me." And he went and got them and brought them to his mother, and his mother made savory food such as his father loved. Then Rebekah took the choice clothes of her elder son Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. And she put the skins of the kids of the goats on his hand and the smooth part on his neck, the smooth part of his neck. Then she gave the savory food and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. So he went to his father and said, "My father." And he said, "Here am I. Well, who are you now, my son?" Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I've done just as you told me. Please arise, sit, and eat of my game, that your soul may bless me." But Isaac said to his son, "How is it that you have found it so quickly, my son?" And he said, because the Lord your God brought it to me. Isaac said to Jacob, please come near now that I may feel you, my son, whether you really are my son Esau or not. So Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, and he felt him and said, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. And he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. Then he said, are you really my son Esau? And he said, I am. He said, bring it near to me and I will eat of my son's game so that my soul may bless you. So he brought it near to him and he ate, and he brought him wine and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, come near now and kiss me, my son. And he came near and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his clothing and blessed him and said, surely the smell of my son is like the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. Therefore may God give you of the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those who bless you. Now it happened, as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, and Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from hunting. He also had made savory food, and brought it to his father, and said to his father, let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that your soul may bless me. And his father Isaac said to him, who are you? So he said, I am your son, your firstborn Esau. Then Isaac trembled exceedingly and said, Where is the one who hunted game and brought it to me? I ate all of it before you came, and I have blessed him, and indeed he shall be blessed. When Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me also, O my father. But he said, your brother came with deceit and has taken away your blessing. And Esau said, is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and now look, he has taken away my blessing. And he said, have you not reserved a blessing for me? Then Isaac answered and said to Esau, indeed, I have made him your master, and all his brethren I have given to him as servants. With grain and wine I have sustained him. What shall I do now for you, my son? And Esau said to his father, have you only one blessing, my father? Bless me, me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Then Isaac his father answered and said to him, behold, your dwelling shall be of the fatness of the earth, and of the dew of heaven from above. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. And it shall come to pass, when you become restless, that you shall break his yoke from your neck. So Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, the days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then I will kill my brother Jacob. And the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, surely your brother Esau comforts himself concerning you by intending to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to my brother Laban in Haran, and stay with him a few days until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you and he forgets what you have done to him. Then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereaved also of you both in one day? And Rebekah said to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob takes a wife of the daughters of Heth, like those who are the daughters of this land, what good will my life be to me? So we're going to work our way through this passage. It's a long story, and there's probably different things that come into your mind as we're reading through it. I tried to come up with 14 points, and I came a little short, so we'll just have to make do with the best that we can here. So this passage begins with Isaac, sure that he is dying, and I have no idea why he thought he was dying. Comes across a little oddly because Isaac was going to live another 50 years after this. Okay, so if I told you I'm dying And then I live another 50 years. You think I was just, something strange was going on. So maybe the issue is his blindness. Abraham seems to have gotten old without any issues, but Isaac was feeble for a long time. And I don't know what was causing his vision issues. Because I'm in the medical field, I always think about these things. And my guess was that he had cataracts. And back then, if you have cataracts, there wasn't anything you could do. Your sight would go. And everything is sort of cloudy. You have trouble with dark night. It's basically the lens in your eye is not letting the light through the way it should. But it is interesting, isn't it, that prior to the time of Isaac, I don't think people got old. They just got old. So what I mean is that people were relatively healthy late in life, and Isaac wasn't as healthy as his father had been at the same age. And so he was sure this meant the end. So we don't know the reason he thought he was dying, but he believed that he needed to give a blessing to his favorite son. And we know from Scripture that the blessing of a dying father was supposed to confer special benefits to the person being blessed. Jacob blessed two different groups of people. He blessed his own sons, and he blessed the sons of Joseph. In Hebrews 11, 20 through 22, I think we read this last Sunday, speaks of the blessings of different of the patriarchs. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. That's what we're talking about today. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshiped, leaning on the top of his staff. By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instruction concerning his bones. And those all take place in the book of Genesis. So I would like to think a little bit about the problem of parents who are not united. So we saw a little bit in last sermon that maybe you all remember and maybe you don't, that Isaac and Rebekah both had a favorite son. Isaac loved Esau most, I guess because he was a manly man and a hunter. And it says that Isaac loved the food that Esau brought home to him. I guess he was something of a foodie, and this game that Esau came up with was so much better than the goats around the place. And yet, turns out he couldn't actually tell the difference when his wife cooked up some kids for him. They thought they tasted pretty good. So maybe the way to Isaac's heart was through his stomach. On the other hand, Jacob was better loved by Rebekah. And once again, the only clue we have as to why that was is that he was around the tents more. We saw him cooking stew the last time, so maybe he helped his mother out. He took home ec, and he was good at homemaking type things, and his mother appreciated that. Esau was always on the go, and she was always having to wash his clothes and mend them after he made a mess of them, or apparently maybe not washing his clothes. So he found out today that his clothes were pretty stinky, even though they should have probably been washed. I guess she got them out of the laundry basket, maybe. So maybe this prophecy had something to do with this. If you remember the prophecy that was given to Rebekah when she was expecting the twins was that the younger would rule over the older. And Rebekah remembered this. And even more than this, at this point in the story, Esau had already married two local girls. And Rebekah did not appreciate her daughters-in-law. So we come to this place and we see a lack of communication and dishonesty going on between the spouses. And this is the big problem here. Isaac did not tell Rebekah of his plan to bless Esau, did he? She overheard it. She overheard a lot of things in this story. And she happened to hear this plan. And on the other side of things, Rebekah did not communicate with Isaac about the way she felt about his decision to bless Esau. So in my mind, I tried to picture what a good a good marriage relationship would look like if this sort of situation came up. So, and this is my writing this conversation. So you just have to realize that I've waxed poetic here. So, "I've not been feeling good lately, Rebecca," Isaac sighed. "You know that my vision is fading fast, and I just don't think I have much time left here. I've decided that I will give Esau my final blessing." Rebecca was silent for a long moment, not sure what to say. Then she began to speak, feeling for the right words. "Beloved, I am worried about Esau and the path that he is choosing with his life. The girls he has chosen, they do not serve the Lord. Also, do you remember the prophecy I received when I was expecting them? The one about the older serving the younger?" Now it was Isaac's turn to be taken aback. He loved Esau dearly, and while he knew that Esau wasn't perfect, Esau was the eldest. Still, a wise man listens to his wife. "Dearest, you are right. I will bless both of our sons this day. I do not know what the blessing will be. That will be revealed by the Lord's Spirit at that moment, but Jacob must also receive a blessing." So, as I was writing this, I thought that there's probably two mistakes. So some people would say, you know, Rebecca should have just told her husband that he was wrong. Isaac, you are wrong. You did not remember. Maybe you're getting senile. And you just need to listen to what God told me, and that would have settled things. Except maybe it wouldn't have. Or maybe Rebecca should have just submitted. She should have said, you know, whatever. Wives should submit to their husbands, and I'm just not going to give my husband feedback because, you know, it may rile him up. And last time it was a 3-hour conversation and nothing changed. Well, neither one of those is a good communication, is it? The hope is that whenever we have a conflict as a husband and wife, that we are able to talk about it and talk about it seriously and listen to each other. So would the end result of this sort of conversation have been different? Well, the answer is probably not for Jacob and Esau. I think it would have been exactly the same, but it would have been very different for Rebecca and Isaac. Ephesians 5, 30 through 33 says, "For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband." Communication is extremely important in a marriage. But I'm afraid that a lot of what passes for communication these days involves husbands and wives telling each other what they've already planned to do. And bad communication is a symptom of a bad relationship. It's not the cause of it. That is to say, most people know how to communicate well. They choose not to do so in certain situations. But if you gave them $1 million, if they were able to communicate well for, let's say, 2 hours, they'd figure out a way to do it. So love and respect have turned into bad words these days, mainly because some people believe that men need to be respected and women need to be loved. And the reality is that both husbands and wives need to feel respected and loved. It's not either or. So if Elaine brings an opinion to me that's different from my initial idea, she needs to know that I'm going to take her seriously. And more than that, I need to realize that I would be dumb not to take her seriously. She often sees things that I'm not aware of and can help me avoid a lot of trouble. Point is not that women are always right, but they're not always wrong either. Husbands and wives need to be one. That's what the passage from Ephesians says. And that means being honest with each other about concerns and feelings in this life. And we see later on in this passage that although Rebecca wanted Jacob to leave because she was concerned about Esau killing Jacob, She decided to tell Isaac that she was concerned about Jacob marrying the wrong person. And maybe that was part of it too. But it does say something about their relationship that she wasn't able to bring up the real reason for this. And my guess is that Isaac would have just laughed if she said that and said, "Don't worry, Jacob and Esau love each other and they're not going to do anything to each other and it'll be just fine." And so I believe sincerely that we all can do better at communicating, particularly in our marriages. And communication involves listening as much as it involves talking. So some of us are good at communicating, but we're not good at hearing the other person. So Rebecca's plan, we're going to move on to thinking a little bit about this plan. So she wanted Jacob to get the blessing, and when Isaac announced this intention to give one, she was sure that she could help Jacob get that blessing. And Jacob was worried about the plan. He never said that he was concerned about the ethics of deceiving his father. He didn't seem so concerned about that, but he was very worried about getting caught and that the blessing would turn into a curse. So what were the parts of the plan? First of all, Rebecca made the right stew. And this family food seemed to be very important. And then they put the kid's skin on the back of Jacob's hands. For this deception to work, it required Isaac to be blind and for Jacob to feel and smell like Esau. And of course, Rebecca had no control over Isaac's vision, but they did get Esau's clothes for Jacob. Apparently, Esau didn't wash them very often, and put animal skin on the back of Jacob's hands and his arms. And then Jacob flat out lied. Some people hedge around, they'll let people think things that aren't true, but Jacob said that he was his brother Esau. So Isaac asked him, "Are you really my son Esau?" And Jacob said, "I am." He lied about how he got the meat for the stew. So the funny thing to me here is that Jacob made it a God thing. He said, "The Lord your God brought it to me." And have you ever noticed how many people make things that they were responsible for into God things? Oh, it's just a God thing. Because, of course, you can't judge somebody if something bad happened when they did it because God wanted them to do it, can you? That's just silliness. So Isaac was deceived. Still think it's a little surprising that he was deceived, but maybe it isn't too surprising that a blind man would not trust the message of his ears and would listen to his other senses. So he blessed him. He blessed him with the dew of heaven. And in the country of Israel, water is the biggest need. And if you do not have enough water, you can't grow anything. If you have water, you can grow things. He blessed him with abundant crops. This goes along with the first thing. Ancient Israel was a farming culture. They grew grains, olives, grapes, and legumes, and they exported them to other places like Phoenicia. People would serve his descendants. So Israel was never a warlike culture. The closest it got was under David. But they did have certain local places like Moab and Edom that they were able to rule over. And people who blessed him would receive a blessing, and those who cursed him would receive a curse. So no sooner did Jacob leave, but Esau returned. And it certainly didn't seem to take him long to go hunting. And Isaac was shocked. There's probably two different things here. First of all, is just the realization that he blessed the wrong son. And then second, and this is probably the bigger thing, is that his younger son had deceived him. This is probably a bigger deal for him. It bothers parents more if their children lie to them about things that they did than the thing that they often did wrong in the first place. So Esau was angry. He was hot. He said that Jacob had stolen his birthright. Not really true. And now he had stolen his blessing as well. And he identified his brother as a conniver and a deceiver. And both of those things were probably true. In fact, they were true. I don't think you can read this story any other way but to see deception as Jacob's way of operating. But the sad thing to me is that we don't see Esau as truly repentant. He saw everything as Jacob's fault and did not see any of the issues in his life as a result of his own behavior. And I think it's amazing how often we see this. There are men who are mean to their wives and then claim that their wives were asking for it. There are bosses who treat their employees unkindly and then wonder why they have trouble keeping employees long-term. Repentance is hard, but it is necessary for real change to happen. If we're always blaming the people around us for inspiring us to bad behavior that we didn't really plan to do, we will never experience victory. So Isaac's response, he didn't have anything saved back. It's possible that that he would have saved something special back if he'd known that Esau was coming second, but he finally came up with a blessing. And most modern translations actually say that Esau's dwelling will be away from the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth. There's a Hebrew word min that can be translated either of or from, and it doesn't really make sense that Isaac gave both the brothers the same thing. And so most people think that Esau was going to be dwelling away from these things. And then the thing that Isaac told Esau was that he'd already given Jacob the dews of heaven and the fatness of the earth, and so Esau would not get those things. The only good thing that Esau got was that he would eventually break free from Jacob's rule. So not a great end result for Esau. So we're going to go and think just a little bit about the end result of this. How did this whole story play out in the lives of the people here? So the question is, what benefit did Jacob get from all of this? And we could split it into two different sections, short-term consequences and long-term consequences of his actions. So the short-term consequences, Esau hated him and really wanted to kill him. Tension between the brothers was high even before this episode, and this just ramped it up. He ended up fleeing his home, and he fled his home with basically no money. We notice on his trip that he had to use a stone for a pillow. He had no caravan to go with him, and all of the money that he would eventually get would only come to him on the death of his father, which was many, many years away. He ended up saying goodbye to his mother, never to see her again. And you notice Rebekah's words to him. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to my brother Laban in Haran, and stay with him a few days until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you, and he forgets what you have done to him. Then I will send and bring you from there. And the words that stand out to me in this passage are a few days. It is heartbreaking to think that Rebekah and Jacob would never see each other again, even though they loved each other deeply because of what happened. We don't know if Rebekah died, if Esau just kept his anger for a long time, what happened. But she never sent for him. He never came back. And Rebekah, even here, seems to be shifting the blame to Jacob. So she says, he forgets what you have done to him. And it seems like the word we would have been a better word there, doesn't it? Until he forgets what we have done to him. Rebekah didn't want to take credit for the fact that her favorite son was going to have to leave home. And she hoped that these short-term consequences would be short, short, short. And they did not end up being short. So what are the long-term consequences of his actions? And this is a big question. Did God only bless Jacob because Jacob stole the family blessing? Would Jacob have still been blessed by God if he had not been deceptive? And as we said earlier, I am convinced that nothing changed at all from this standpoint. So many of the pagan religions around were focused on manipulating their gods to do what they wanted them to do. The Jews knew that they could not do this. The Old Testament said clearly that God valued obedience over sacrifice. Isaac's blessing was as the result of God speaking through him. If he had tried to bless Jacob and Esau in ways that were not in accordance with God's future plans for the two of them, he would have been unsuccessful. So God did not reward Jacob for his deception. Instead, God led him away on a path that would lead to personal growth. And that was a very hard path indeed. And then I do find it amusing that at the end of this passage, in it's actually in Genesis chapter 28, we're not going to read the whole section, we find Esau trying to fix the situation. So, and he fixed it in an odd sort of way. So he didn't do anything about his current wives, the daughters of Heth that were mentioned here. But if we look at Genesis 28, 8 and 9, it says, "Also Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan did not please his father Isaac. So Esau went to Ishmael and took Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebajoth, to be his wife, in addition to the wives he had." And this approach speaks maybe to the sort of person that Esau was. He didn't do anything about the distressing women in his life, but somehow he thought that if he just married a third wife that was a cousin of his, this would fix the situation. And I'm going to say that I see this sort of thing all of the time. There's a lot of people that do not want to give up some sort of sinful behavior that they have, and so they try to add good things. There are wealthy people out there who are doing some pretty bad stuff, but they give money to charitable causes, and they think that that takes care of it. God doesn't work that way. He will not be bribed off your case, and what he wants is not gifts. He wants repentance and obedience. So, conclusion. The character of a man will always catch up with the ministry of a man. The character of a man will always catch up with the ministry of a man. There was a man by the name of Han van Meegeren from the Netherlands. He was an artist, but apparently not the sort of artist that could sell a lot of paintings for much money. He did some portraits and some different things like that, but he wanted success faster than what he was getting it. And in the late 1920s, he decided that he would start making forgeries of old master's paintings. So it's not easy to make forgeries that people think are really old pictures. So once again, as my story of counterfeiting, I couldn't do this. But he would mix his paints with lilac oil to stop the colors from fading or yellowing in heat. This caused his studio to smell so strong of lilacs that he kept a vase of fresh lilacs nearby at all times so that visitors would not be suspicious. Then after completing a painting, he would bake it at 100 degrees Celsius, 212 degrees Fahrenheit, to harden the painting, and then he would roll it over with a rolling pin to increase cracks. Later, he would wash the painting in black India ink to fill in the cracks. And so he would do this. He was not taking paintings that people, he wouldn't take the Mona Lisa and do this. He would take a painting that nobody had ever seen before that was in the style of an artist, and then he would put that artist's signature on there, and he would sell these for lots and lots of money. Now, over time, he sold his forgeries for more and more money, eventually selling a forgery to a banker in the Third Reich. After World War II, he was taken to trial for being a Nazi sympathizer and a supporter of theirs. And at this point, he confessed that all of the paintings he had sold were forgeries. He ended up being sentenced to a year in prison, but died during that year. His pursuit of wealth meant that he left none of his own work behind, but only forgeries and a bankrupt life. If we pursue wealth and are willing to deal deceptively with others, we may be able to achieve that. But in the end, it'll be as unstable as a house of cards. There are many examples of this throughout history. Jacob was not the man he would eventually become, and maybe God saw the potential here. The blessing is that when God looks at you and me, he sees what we can be, not what we are. More than that, as I think about this story, I pray that our homes would be united. Satan loves to drive wedges between husband and wife, parents and children. Most of us have reasons that we believe we are on the right track, and it's the people around us who are messed up. At the end of the day, for our homes to be worth something, we need to focus on healing differences and communicating better. And communicating better, as I said, means listening better. None of us struggle to speak. Very few of us do. And not standing on the fact that we are right and the people we live with are completely wrong. I feel like I'm awfully hard on Jacob. There are plenty of reasons not to judge him too harshly. He ended up suffering much before he returned to land. He never saw his mother again. And yet, I don't want us to read his story and come away with the conclusion that what he did here was okay. That God approved of what he did because he blessed him. That is the wrong reading of the story. This is descriptive of what happened, not set before us to tell us that it's how we should behave. And I finish thinking that so much would have been better if Jacob had trusted God. And how willing I am to trust God. Do I believe that God is good and that I can trust him with my life even when I can't see what is around the corner? I hope so, because God is always faithful every single day.